Welcome to Voice of Albion with Paul Hickman on the White Network.
My brothers, my sisters, I bring you a message of solidarity, a call to action, and a demand for adherence to duty. Resurgence and ultimately total Aryan victory. 10 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. 100 hearts, 1 beat. 10,000 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. Total Aryan victory. 10 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. 100 hearts, 1 beat. 10,000 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. Born to fight and to die and to continue. 10 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. 100 hearts, 1 beat. 10,000 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. Total Aryan victory. 10 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. 100 hearts, 1 beat. 10,000 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. Total Aryan victory. 10 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. 100 hearts, 1 beat. 10,000 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. Total Aryan victory. 10 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. 100 hearts, 1 beat. 10,000 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. Total Aryan victory. 10 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. 100 hearts, 1 beat. 10,000 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. Total Aryan victory. 10 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. 100 hearts, 1 beat. 10,000 hearts, 1 beat, beat, beat. Total Aryan victory.
Human renewal. Symbols are every bit as important as guns and money and manpower.
Onward we will go, onward to the stars, high above the mud of yellow, black, and brown. So kinsmen, duty calls. The future is now. Months from now, you have not yet fully committed yourself to the alliance. You have definitely betrayed your race. You have betrayed yourself. So stand up like men and drive the enemy into the sea. Stand up like men and swear a sacred oath on the green grain of our fires that you will reclaim what our forefathers discovered, explored, conquered, settled, built, and died for. Stand up like men and reclaim our soil.
Welcome to Voice of Albion on the White Network. The intro you heard there was Robert Matthews, 10,000 Hearts, 1 Beat. This evening we have a guest. He is the organiser for National Action, which is a social nationalist campaign group here in England. His name is Tom. Hi Tom, thanks for coming on.
Hi Paul, thanks for having me.
No problem. I'll just say, first of all, at this time we are not going to show a picture of you or give your full name as you are at university. I can confirm you are a National Action organiser because I've done activism with you under your banner. I know Richard Edmonds mentioned yesterday on Carolyn's show about younger people have to be careful with their careers and stuff, which was total coincidence, but there you go. So I don't think anyone should have a problem with that. Let me start. Recently, there was a Facebook group set up by some Marxist students, and it was an anti-National Action group. They didn't like the fact that National Action had been sticking up some stickers and posting some leaflets around campus. So let me just read, first of all, what the Marxist anti-National Facebook group writ, or the admin wrote. National Action, unlike most fascist groups, that's white and normal groups, organises in clandestine cells. That means it's impossible to know how many members there are on campus. It is probably a splinter group of the British movement, which was known for its extreme violence. If you look at the website of National Action, they are also more articulate than many far-right groups, which means they have potential to attract new members quickly. As fascist groups go, this one is probably one of the more insidious and dangerous. The anti-fascist group is against not only National Action, but all far-right movements. It is also a venue for the anti-racist, they mean anti-white, anti-sexist, pride, and all other hate groups to meet and discuss a broader social context between their issues, behind their issues, which normally remain separate. This does not necessitate any particular political views. A healthy debate about the causes of homophobia, racism, sexism, classism, and so forth is better than a rigid and dogmatic stance. So they had their little meeting there. What do you make of that, Tom?
Well, it's interesting to see that they're taking it so seriously, to the point that they've decided to reform the anti-fascist group on campus. I don't actually think we have any members who are actually at that particular university. I believe that we just decided to turn up one day and do a bit of a sticker run, you know, around the time of the start of term, just to see if we could pick up a few members. So it's quite peculiar that they've decided to pick up on this issue now. You know, that particular university is a very sort of leftist university, so maybe it's a case that they've run out of other issues to talk about, and now they've decided to pick up on this particular issue. Of it? Yeah.
I was just going to say, there's also been, in the past week or so, a student newspaper article written about National Action, but I won't read through that. I'll put a post link to that on the show page. But you've also been picked up by Searchlight, which is a communist far-left organisation run by a real rat of a man called Jerry Gable. Yes. And Jerry Gable was, some years ago, caught red-handed burgling David Irving's flat, I believe. So I'm just going to read through what they wrote, or Jerry Gable wrote, on the 24th of February this year. And the title is, Neo-Nazis Disrupt Blank University Lecture. A guest lecture by Professor Alex Kalinikos at the University of Blank was disrupted by neo-Nazi activists last month. Stand for Peace has learned. An official of the West Midlands-based group National Action, whose official blog describes the Greek far-right Golden Dawn movement as a perfect example of what we'd like to replicate, wrote on the white supremacist forum Stormfront.org that National Action activists joined a contingent of students at the university to disrupt and close down a talk being given by Marxist academic Alex Kalinikos. Kalinikos, a senior member of the far-left Social Workers' Party, whose father fought against the Nazi occupation of Greece during World War II, was also confronted at the University of Warwick by feminist students protesting the rape apologism of his party. Other demonstrations held by National Action in recent times include draping a banner with the slogan "Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white" over a bridge in Birmingham, and the flash mob in Blank, during which members held aloft National Action, National and Socialist placards. Material published on a National Action website is openly racist, featuring anti-Semitic imagery and lengthy quotations by Adolf Hitler. Its motto is for a free white Britain. Now, this is interesting, Tom, because that other group, the little Facebook group, drops in your sexist, homophobic, classist. Yep. Now, can you explain what was going on here and why National Action attended this event?
Yeah, basically, we found out that Alex Kalinikos was speaking at the university. And so, you know, we decided to turn up. And it just so happens that a group of feminist students had also decided to turn up and protest at the fact that he's part of an organization, the Socialist Workers' Party, that harbors within its ranks
apologise for rapists, don't they?
Yes, they, one of their central directive members is a rapist. You know, we don't have to beat around the bush. Even though he hasn't been prosecuted or anything, it's quite obvious that he is. He's even if he isn't, I mean, he's a very creepy looking individual. Someone I wouldn't allow near children and any right minded person.
The scandal there was Tom. And he made the national press in England, was it wasn't just the fact that he had an allegation. It was the fact that the allegation was not reported to the police by the Socialist Workers' Party. It was dealt with in-house.
Yes, now, it was handled by an internal investigation, yeah. And that's one of the reasons why people were so outraged by this. The fact is, pressure was put on this particular individual, the lady who had been raped, to not go to the police. She had been told that they treat rape victims terribly, that they intimidate them, that they won't believe her, and she was spoon-fed a load of crap by what is essentially a fucking cult. You know, we've heard stories from former SWP members in the past about how if you don't go out with an SWP member, you're seen as suspicious or sort of acting in an anti-socialist manner. If you don't give money to the SWP, you're seen as an anti-socialist, or you're acting as a counter-revolutionary or whatever. Or you're not being as dedicated to the cause. You know, so this is why we turned up here. And as well, for those who may think, you know, oh, the SWP, it's another political party, they're a bit extreme, maybe a bit on the fringe, but so are we. One of the things that Alex Klinikos said at this meeting was that he was totally against racism and fascism, and that he'd spent all of his life fighting against racism and fascism. And members of his organization have been quoted as saying that back during in the 70s, when the National Front was in the ascendancy, that if breaking the National Front requires breaking arms and legs, then so be it. This is a militant anti-fascist organization that uses violence to achieve its aims. It's a terrorist organization. You know, if we're going to be blunt about it, you know, if you use terror, violence for political ends, you're a terrorist. These people are terrorists, and they were given they were actually invited to the university by the French department, I believe, by the French department. Why the hell was he invited by the French department? Who knows? But
this is the supreme irony, Tom. They call you all these things, or your organization,
many of which are lies.
I mean, classism, I mean, that's a load of rubbish, because I've done activism with you guys, and you've got students, university students, working class people, people out of work, all the whole range. And women, I presume, are more than welcome.
They're more than welcome. We would love more women.
How are you sexist?
And then, they say we're male only. Well, you know, if a female emailed me and said, "Oh, I'd love to get involved," bloody hell, yeah, she can get involved. No worries, no worries there. You know, so they've just pulled that out of thin air. You know,
here they are defending a group, this SWP, who shelters alleged rapists instead of letting the law deal with it. They're more like Muslims, and they deal with it in house. Plenty of violence, like you say. Burgling people's houses, and Martin Smith, they can see images of him at the EDL rally in Birmingham, literally punching a young white lad while some other Pakistanis rag him up, pulling him around. So I think we've covered that pretty well. That's what these abhorrent communists, they always turn it around. We are fighting for our people, and your organisation, especially for the youth, to give the youth a voice, to give the youth an outlet. So let's move on from that subject, Tom. Let me ask you, what made you start up National Action, and how did you decide upon the name?
Okay, basically, there wasn't a nationalist youth group doing anything in this country about 6 months ago when we started. So we identified, me and a few others, identified there was a vacuum, and we decided to fill that vacuum. When we began brainstorming and seeing what needed to be done, we realized that, you know, the main problem here was a lack of action. You know, a number of political parties, they have, like, you know, young BNP or whatever, but they don't do anything. You know, they're not they don't do anything specifically to target young people. And we decided that from the very beginning, we were going to be about one thing, and we were going to make that the centerpiece of our organization. That was action, activity, that we were going to do things. And that's why we called ourselves National Action, because we do things, we get it done, you know.
I did like the name. Let me ask you about campaigning with non-whites. Would you, just to make people who might be listening, who might be thinking of getting involved, would you ever campaign with Chinese or Indians or anything like that, or is it purely for white people?
We're for British people, and, you know, we see the legitimate British people as being, you know, white, so... Why somebody who was Chinese or Indian want to get involved? I have no idea, you know.
They will have the picture taken with a Chinese person or an Indian and think, wow, look, here I am, I'm not racist, quote unquote, look at me, and all this kind of stuff. So what I'm just getting at is, can you kind of guarantee people that if they get involved in National Action, that's not going to happen?
Well, I'm not going to force them to have their picture taken with non-whites. No, I mean, I know what you mean. I know what you mean about, you know.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if I come to a demo,
yeah,
National Action, or somebody else comes along, because, well, let's say.
Yeah, okay. I know what you're getting at. You know, we're not going to be having any members who are anti-British. We're not going to be having any members who aren't British themselves. We're not going to be having people, you know, like the BNP did. You know, they decided to have this, you know, Carlos Cotiglia stand as their London mayoral candidate, who decided to make some really foolish statements to the newspapers a few years back about how he supported the Argentinians' right to the Falklands. You know, we're not going to have any people like that. Anybody who's anti-British, anybody who doesn't stand for British interests, is not welcome in our group. So, yeah, I mean, that's the final line. That's where we stand on that.
So as you say, the group has been going about 6 months.
6 months, yeah.
What are your honest thoughts on the last 6 months? How has it gone? And maybe give the listeners some kind of overview of the activities you've done over the past 6 months.
A slow start, but it's getting busier. We're doing more things. We're getting bigger. We're flexing our muscle a bit more. So, you know, overall, it's been a bit slow. We're still a bit small, but we're getting bigger, and we started off 6 months ago being a handful of people, 4 or 5 people, discussing things on Skype and Facebook and saying, oh, wouldn't it be really good if we just did this or did that, you know? And now we're at a position where, you know, a few weeks ago, we were talking to our friends in NS Straight Edge, and we decided that we were going to hold a demo, a day of action, for the nationalists in Ukraine, solidarity with the nationalists in Ukraine. We put our minds to that. We got everything together for that. We planned it out. And on the day, people turned up and we did it, you know. And that's really, you know, that's really been the sort of the cherry on the cake has been, you know, that we've set our mind to do several things. So the banner drop in Coventry, the banner drop in Birmingham, the flash demo in Coventry. You know, we've done so much stickering, so much leafleting that doesn't get mentioned a lot because, you know, it's quite mundane stuff. It's banal stuff. Everyone does that, but we've done a lot of that, you know. What else have we done? We've attended the National Front Remembrance Day parade, the Golden Dawn thing, in London last November. We've done attended the John Tyndall Memorial Meeting. We went to the Jorvik Viking Festival we've done so many things, you know, lots of small things, a few big things.
I thought you started off a bit modest there, but you've listed more. You forgot about the leafleting session you did in Birmingham, which was just before Christmas last year. Now, yeah. Birmingham is a majority non-white, 50-50, yeah. Let's say, that's being kind. Now, you did that. It was very busy. And I just want to touch on a comment someone left recently on Daily Stormer. Now, this person is a good guy, I think, but he kind of questioned are you just another EDL shouting at Muslims? Now, I posted the leaflet you've got about breaking the usury and debt slavery, and you've got that kind of famous cartoon picture of a Jew rubbing his hands. So you was brazen, you and the other guys, give those leaflets out, and you was out there, so not too bad from what I've saw for 6 months.
That was an interesting day. I mean, I'm sure we were all a bit anxious about that, because, you know, Birmingham, I don't think even
to my knowledge, we've certainly not set up a stall in Birmingham city centre, because quite frankly, it would be dangerous. I've heard that the security was there some years ago, and they had like a big dog with them, and they was giving out a few leaflets. But I mean, they're like big burly men. They're like big skinheads. You're just young students, normal people, and you did it. So nice job. Nice job there.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you.
You was recently interviewed by Vice magazine. That's VICE, which has an Alexa ranking of 927 worldwide. So that's quite, they've got quite a good reach. I understand they've not published it yet, but you may be queued up. But how did that go anyway?
I think it went quite well. It was a bit underwhelming. I thought, you know, an interview with Vice magazine would be a bit more grandiose in it than it actually was. I didn't get my free meal, unfortunately.
You didn't?
I didn't, no. A
few points? Or?
I got one.
1 point, eh?
Well, one Coke.
Okay. Oh, yeah, you don't drink. That's good.
Yeah.
So hopefully you'll be in Vice magazine before too long.
Hopefully, yeah. We're waiting to hear back from him, but I mean, it took us a few weeks to actually arrange the initial interview, and I think there'll probably be a second one in a few weeks' time. But I mean,
did you see the video of in Pussy Riot in Russia when they was getting whipped by the Cossacks? Mm-hmm. I noticed that there was a Vice magazine journalist there. He had like blonde hair and glasses. I don't know if you saw that. I was just wondering if it was the same journalist who interviewed you.
No. I think they've got quite a few journalists. I think
sure they have.
Yeah. The one who interviewed us was a guy called Jake Hanrahan. He had it's weird. He's actually done a few interviews with people like what are they calling now? I think they're called the IFA, and they're an anarchist terrorist network. He's done some other things, you know, with like international art dealers and all that sort of stuff. Really sort of big name people. And I was quite surprised that he decided to take an interest in us, because we're still, you know, especially at this time, because it was just before we'd done the Coventry demo. So we were still not at that time, I wouldn't have considered us to be a much of a going concern at that point, but, I was surprised taking an interest.
Yeah, this kind of brings it around to the tactics and strategy of your kind of strategy of, to quote the Marxist Facebook group, clandestine cells. Because what they did not seem to like, they couldn't tell how many of you there were or what your plans were, who you are. Mm-hmm. And that seems to give you like an edge, and I would sort of contend that's why Vice magazine got interested.
Yeah, I mean, the Reds are certainly scared, you know. I think that's why they did it. Why they've made such a palaver about it, because they're scared. They don't know who we are, how many of us there are, and that was really, you know, our intention from the get-go was we weren't going to name we weren't going to put, you know, ourselves out there. We weren't going to take photos of ourselves and, you know, name ourselves and all the rest of it. You know, we were going to keep our profiles as individuals quite sort of low key. We're going to blank out faces whenever we did activities and all the rest of it. You know, because it has that effect on people, because, you know, the left have always been able to identify us very easily, because we've always named ourselves in our publications and the reports that we publish after activities. Mm-hmm. And they've actually been able to use that information gleaned from our own reports to intimidate us. And this actual leftist group, they published a small piece of research that they'd done on National Action, and they mentioned in it that they were actually going to attempt to identify members and engage in what they described as peaceful intimidation.
That's a bit of an oxymoron, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is. It is. One would have thought that intimidation, by its very nature, was somewhat
sinister.
Somewhat a violation, at least, of one's, you know, of one's right to just go about their own business on the day to day and just get on with their business. But I think that's put the frighteners into them. And that's good. That's good. Yeah, because all the time we're on the back foot. We're the ones who are being made to feel, you know, like the bad guys. We're the ones made to feel scared. We're obviously not going to, you know, threaten anyone. We're not actually threatening anyone. We're actually violent to anyone. But if they want to cry about it, they want to cry about it. You know, these people are crybabies anyway. So it's to be expected. But yeah, I mean, I think our strategy at the moment is working. It's impressing a lot of people. We certainly are. I don't want to big ourselves up in any way, shape or form, but I think we are a very well organized group, and we come across as very well organized, and we take care in our presentation. And it's the first rule of propaganda, of course, is to maintain the flow of information, to make sure that you control what you put out, so that everything you do put out is a positive view of yourselves. And that's what we've been doing so far. And I think that's what's impressed so many people, because it's not just Vice magazine, it's also nationalists in our own ranks. Yeah, Heritage and Destiny have decided to publish an advert in the next issue of their magazine for us, and they've done that off their own backs. They told us, you know, if you design an advert, we'll put it in there with no cost to yourselves, and we've been very thankful for that. You know, well done to the guys at Heritage and Destiny for that.
That's,
you know,
good. Is it Peter Rushton who runs that?
Yeah, Peter Rushton and Mark Cotterill, they do a fantastic job over there. You know, please, 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 everyone who's listening to this, go and subscribe to Heritage and Destiny, because it's the best nationalist magazine out there. Always really good articles on there, you know. Top rate analysis of the situation.
Well,
you know,
I mean, their analysis of the electoral fortune of the British National Party is second to none. I think,
of course,
from 2012 and... even to, because I was organizer for Birmingham and Solihull in 2012, and they'd kind of pointed out, you know, the where we'd stood and where we hadn't stood. And the good ward in Solihull would have been Chemsley Ward, where the British National Party used to have a councillor. Now, I had a candidate arranged for Chemsley Ward, and it was just so it happened. He dropped out. Then I had another one. They dropped out. Then I had another one, and he says, well, I'm moving to Bulgaria. I've had enough of this country. So I had tried to get candidates for Chemsley Wood. I understood that was the best ward in Solihull for us. But the girl who wanted to stand in Smith's Wood, the neighbouring ward, very good candidate, Claudette Neal, she says, well, I'd rather stand in my own ward. Well, I can't argue with that. But it did strike me. I thought, wow, you know, here you are. It listed the whole of the country in detail. And he knew that little detail about Birmingham and Solihull. I thought, well, that is some pretty astute analysis there from the Heritage and Destiny. You're also a bit connected to Western Spring, right? Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we try and maintain good relations with all nationalist organizations, even if, you know, we disagree with their modes of operation. You know, Western Spring, I think, are a really good what they're doing there is a really fantastic operation. You know, they've got a really good concept, I mean, it's up for them to explain what they're doing, but yeah, I mean, we have connections to them, and we maintain good relations with them.
I'd like to have the leader of Western Spring on some time to explain the whole sort of philosophy of what they're doing. It's a bit of an acorn at the moment, but as you say, it does seem like a promising concept.
Yes, yeah. I mean, the great thing about them is that they do, I believe, want to at some point launch a political party. once it has met, the vital prerequisites. But then their plan also has a contingency, which means that even if they aren't able to make that electoral breakthrough, they still have a means of assuring the existence of white people in this country, which is, fantastic.
Kind of little white communities kind of thing.
Yeah, well, hopefully not little, quite big white communities, but
sure.
Yeah, we'll see how things progress. And
okay, let me move on, Tom, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. Am I correct that you, as a group, don't believe in voting politics, or would it be more accurate to say you think politics is important as a wider struggle / strategy?
Yeah, well, the main concern of our group is that we want to see nationalists have some real influence in this country. And will we ever get that through voting? Will we ever get that through obsessing with the electoral system? I don't think we will. We've been trying to get, some form of influence in this country for, ever since Mosley, really, through the electoral process. Mosley was always going to try and take power through constitutional means. And that hasn't worked. That road to taking power hasn't worked. And I think what we're trying to do is we're trying to look at alternative means of gaining power, of winning influence in the community and in the country at large. And so we've, for the time being, we've rejected party politics entirely. When the National Front get 33 votes in the best nationalist ward in Birmingham, now is not the time to be standing candidates. Now's the time to be looking at other means of winning some form of credibility in the eyes of the people,
It's certainly not the time to launch another nationalist political party, that's for sure.
Well, yeah, I mean, how many are there at the moment,
Too many
to count. So to think that, to form another political party, just changing the faces at the top is not going to work, you've got to look at things like community building, things like alternative media, things like direct action. That's going to be the way forward. That's going to be the way that we enlarge our support base.
What I'm getting at, Tom, but you don't totally reject it. Do you still, you see a way for it? You see a purpose in the bigger scheme of things?
Well, I mean, electoral politics, there should be a purpose. There should be, to understand how one, forms a political party and then gains power isn't a difficult concept to understand. It's fairly simple. One stands as the candidate in an election, one becomes an MP, one sits with a political party, and then when one political party has the majority of seats in the House of Commons, they then become the leading party. Their leader then becomes prime minister. It's not a difficult concept to understand, but it's getting into parliament. It's getting those seats, and we haven't been able to do it.
And the trouble is in the UK, it's first past the post as well, which a lot of Americans or people might not understand. That countries like Greece and France, they have a proportional representation system, where you can get 7%, 8%, and you still get a seat or two. Whereas, for example, the British National Party vote in 2010, if we had had proportional representation, we probably would have got more in. But, you're saying, what's the point of keep slogging a dead horse? And I understand that. So maybe your way around could change something one day to say, national action, we want proportional representation. What's the
point? Proportional representation isn't going to win us victory, because at the end of the day, in France, where the nationalists have a lot of influence, they have, if you want to get into the French parliament, you have to win an absolute majority. You have to win 50% or more to get into parliament. They actually have a system that's much, much harder to get for somebody to get elected than we do here, because somebody can get elected here at 30% of the vote.
Really? But, are you telling me that Le Pen's granddaughter got over 50%?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a good thing in a way, but at the same time,
I didn't realize that.
They actually used to. In France in the early '90s, late '80s, the Front National made their breakthrough, and they got something like 50. I think it was 50 in the lower chamber of the French Parliament, because they have a bicameral house. But then they changed it, the bastards. They changed it to...
That's the problem, the old changing the goalpost, yeah.
But even in somewhere like Ukraine, Svoboda had 32 MPs. Those 32 MPs didn't do nothing. They had no impact on the situation on the ground. What has won the Ukrainians their freedom? The fact is, no matter what we think about, the Ukraine situation, one cannot say that nationalists have not gained from that. Nationalists have moved from the fringes to having real power in that country on some level, those MPs played a very little role in gaining that. What regained that was muscle on the streets.
Yeah, I guess. It's a very thorny issue in Ukraine at the moment.
Sorry, Paul. I don't mean to derail the conversation. But then look at Greece. Greece, the Greeks, the Golden Dawn have gotten a load of MPs. But they're still being persecuted by the state. Just because you have a few MPs doesn't really mean anything. It's real power. It's real influence. The left have never won an election in this country. But the far left have never won an election in this country. Yet far right ideas, attitudes permeate through. All modes of life,
institutions, stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, we can use that as an example,
Greece, the Golden Dawn, it did help that they had some MPs, didn't it? Because if they didn't have any MPs, people will be like, well, what's this rabble on the street? And also, Tom, having the MPs, they use the money correctly, unlike our party that got elected. They use the money correctly, and they didn't mess around with a few tins of food. Mm-hmm. They pulled up with whole lorries full of food. Now, they probably wouldn't have had that money if they hadn't got MPs elected, because as I understand, it's like about 80% of their salary they was contributing to the party, which then wasn't disappearing down a black hole or disappearing to a farm in Welsh pool. It was actually going back into the street, and so it got a perpetual sort of motion going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they used that. They used being elected to the parliament in Greece as an opportunity. They exploited that, and they reaped the gains, but that's not really seeing my point. My point was that one sees getting elected into parliament as gaining some form of power, and they haven't really gained any power in any real sense from that. They're still being oppressed as much as they were before. They still
they're not making the laws, are they?
Well, they're not making the laws. No, where their power has come from a real respect. As you say, their charity work, their social activity has, their activism has, brought them a respect, some power, some credibility in the eyes of the Greek people. Yeah, that's good. But that's what gained them those seats in the Greek Parliament. They've used resources then. They gained from being elected to Parliament, so they got a salary from that, and they've used that, they've put it back into the things that have gained them some form of credibility, and that's how they've gained that sort of momentum.
That's real National Socialism.
Well, yeah, one could call it that. Yeah, that's real.
It's not being materialistic. Like, okay, now I'm an MP. I think I'll buy myself a nice 40 grand Range Rover and go on holidays to the Caribbean every year. Now I'm an MP, the people voted me in. Now I'm going to get it on the streets. I'm going to donate this extra money, a big chunk of the salary, and put it back to the people. And then through word of mouth, alternative media, et cetera, you get a perpetual kind of cycle of support. Mm. And it's only because, well, they've killed a couple of them, haven't they? They've shot a couple. They've locked all the leaders up. But, well, it'll be interesting to see how they do in the Euros, because as I understand, in May, if they keep outlawing the name Golden Dawn, they'll just come up with another name. Mm-hmm. But basically, how that started, I think we can agree that the political process has a, and we're talking about Britain, has a part to play, but is not the only part, because you get some people who have been doing this for years and years, and they're still sticking with it. You know, we'll get there in the end. Something's going to happen. There'll be an almighty crash, and all these votes will come. So I don't agree with that, but I also don't agree with the other side, which is like, no point voting politics whatsoever. No point mm-hmm. having candidates whatsoever.
Yeah.
Can we agree that there's room for both, that both have their uses?
Well, I suppose, you know, hypothetically. but, you know, it's one of these things. Voting a lot of the time is a temporal thing. You know, sometimes standing in an election will be a great idea and we'll gain something from it. But, you know, I mean, there are some people who say, you know, every year we've got to stand in this constituency and we've got to get the same 2% of the vote as we always get. And that's not helpful. And yeah, I mean, we do have to build that wider movement. We do have to build those community groups. We do have to build that army of militant street activists. We do have to build those meta political and cultural organizations that will, you know, that will make us that will sort of that will build a more holistic movement that won't just build an electoral phenomenon. It'll build a more holistic movement. And
well, yeah, that's
from there,
I agree with that totally.
Yeah,
Jobbik with the Hungarian Guard. I mean,
of course, yeah, I mean that's an example.
Churchill outlawed political uniforms in his country, but I can't see people being arrested for all wearing the same T-shirt with a national logo on it or something like that. So let's move on. This question seems a bit funny after what I've just said, but which nationalist party in the UK would you say National Action has most in common with?
Well, probably the National Front.
National Front? Okay.
Yeah, if we're talking about registered political parties, the National Front, yeah.
Yeah. Would you and other National Action activists help out the National Front in elections?
Yeah. If it was in our interests, yeah.
Yeah. So I know I plan to stand for the National Front this May in my local area, and you have offered your help to hopefully bring some other activists to help me leaflet.
Yeah.
So that's good, because you know I've been on your activities. So if you help me, I just think that's a good way to go. Because some people, Tom, they like going to ward meetings. They like getting involved in local politics. They like standing as a candidate. Some people like that. So I don't think we should dissuade people away from that. But I understand that your aims are from a different angle, which is fine. I like your approach. But I just like to think that we can do both.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, you know, everyone has got to find their part to play, and everyone has to find a part that they play that's productive. And you know, I mean, that what you're talking about, going to ward meetings, getting elected as a councillor. You're not going to get elected as a councillor if you don't do any community work, if you don't know anybody in the community.
Exactly.
And so, you know, ideally what we need to do is we need to build that national community up. You know, we need to build build up our Volksgemeinschaft, you know.
I wouldn't invite you and some of the other National Action to come to my local ward meeting, because I think you'd find it boring. But I have been to some ward meetings where I've saw local people getting up, and we've done leaflets before when I was in the BNP to invite people around the area. I'm talking thousands of leaflets inviting people to come to the ward meeting for a specific reason. And the MP had to come to one because Steve McCain, a piece of shit, because anyway, I won't go into the issue, but I saw this woman, a local woman, and she dressed him down. She you know, she verbally bashed him all over the place, saying, I've written letters to you, the councillor, all three councillors, and I've written letters to you, MP Steve McCabe, and you've ignored me. Why have you ignored me? And he was just seeing the look on the face that was so dumbstruck. And usually they're used to seeing at these ward meetings about, you know, four or five people, you know, like old man and his dog turn up. We'd got involved and we had 50, 60 people in there. Mm-hmm. And they didn't like that. So, you know, there's uses, you know, it's not even just voting. Politics is a bit wider than that. But I think it's politics is a bit more of an older person's game. When I say older, I mean over 30, maybe over 25, over 30. Yeah. Because for a few reasons, you've got the employment thing we spoke about at the start and your university career or whatever. Once you are an activist for a nationalist group, you are it for life. It doesn't matter if you change your mind in 10 years and say, I used to be a nationalist, but I'm not anymore. Because any employer or anyone can always Google it. But I mean, I'm comfortable with that, but I think some younger people might, you know, I'll stand as a candidate. Mm-hmm. And then they think, oh, damn, I'm not going to get this job. I'm not going to be able to do this postgraduate course. And
yes, yeah.
And there has been some real tragedies. There was a story up north, I think his name was Luke something. He got elected for the BNP. He couldn't have been older than 20. I think he was 19. He got elected, and I saw this picture of him, and he had his fist up, you know, real happy. And then he had some other trouble with the law. Next thing you know, it was a suicide case. So I don't think it's suitable, maybe it's always, for younger people. Because, I mean, I've been to election camps where they've said, you know, don't stand by my table, you know, this Labour. Ooh, don't come on my table because I had a BNP rosette on. Now, if they said that to me now, I'd say, well, who'd want to stand with a party that supports paedophiles? Who'd want to stand by a party which has the blood of a million Iraqi children on their hands? You know, I can be a bit more mature to say that now. I'm in my 30s, but it might be a bit much. And then you have to understand that if the person does get elected, then they've got to walk into that council chamber and all these ward meetings. And they're in a very adult world, you know, a world where people have got years and years, decades of experience, and we know that most of them are Marxists. They're not going to give this young guy any favours. There you go. Anyway, it's all relevant. So let me move on. What are your thoughts on Golden Dawn, Yabik and Svoboda, the Freedom Party in Ukraine? I don't expect to be a sort of an expert on all three, but have you got any thoughts on those three parties?
Yeah, Golden Dawn, fantastic organization. As that news article said, we want to replicate what Golden Dawn were doing in Greece, here in the UK. That's exactly what we want to do. We look to them, and we get a real inspiration from those people. You know, when you see what they have to put up with, you know, when you see that their activists getting shot in the street like dogs, you know, when we see that, you know, that makes us think, you know, things in the UK aren't that bad. You know, yeah, okay, we have our problems internally. We have our, you know, we have a bit of problems with the Reds. We have problems with police, maybe. But it doesn't matter. Compared to what they go through on a day-to-day basis, it's nothing. And it really makes us just want to fight harder, struggle harder, and, you know, eventually, you know, get closer to that day where we actually win, you know. When you look at Jobbik, we see a movement there that has taken old ideas and has made them relevant to contemporary Hungarian society. And when we look at Ukraine, we see a movement that is, Svoboda. I'm not too sure about them. I've heard some bad things about their stance on the European Union, and I think that whilst I stand, you know, with genuine Ukrainian nationalists 100%, we have got to consider that exchanging Russian tyranny for European tyranny is not the same thing. You know, it's not a good thing. We've got to fight for a Europe of fatherlands, a Europe of free and sovereign countries. And that's why we've been much more explicit in our support for groups like Right Sector than we have been for groups like Svoboda. But, you know, I mean, if Svoboda are nationalists, if they have the genuine interests of the Ukrainian people at heart, we can't but support them in their efforts. You know, we have to, you know, when the leftists talk about they always try and factor in, you know, all these different struggles together, you know, the anti-racism struggle, the anti-sexism struggle, the struggle for more, the struggle for more rights for trade unionists. What that is, it's an idea of uniting all these different struggles, all these different liberation struggles together. We as European people are engaged in a real liberation struggle. In a real liberation struggle to unshackle our people, whether it be in Eastern Europe from Russian chauvinism, from that, you know, from that old hand of Russia, or whether it's in the West to free our people from the shackles of international finance. Whatever it is, we're fighting a real liberation struggle, and we have got to unify our struggles as Europeans, because we're all in this together. You know, Greece. If Golden Dawn take power in Greece, they're not going to be able to do it alone. They're going to need the Ukrainians to get their act together and take power in Ukraine. They're going to need Jobbik to take power in Hungary. And so, you know, that's our stance on the European situation, sure, in a nutshell,
if,
you know.
Tom, if Golden Dawn get to the stage where they're almost getting power, I predict it will be a Spanish civil war in Greece, mm-hmm, and around there. I really do see that coming.
And who won the Spanish Civil War? It was the Nationalists.
We did.
So, yeah, we did. We did. So,
Golden Dawn, I think the secret to their success is not diluting the message, keeping the message strong. Mm. You know, for years and years, they was kind of in the shadows, but they stuck it out. They didn't sort of make compromises for a few votes here and there, and it paid off eventually. So
yes.
That's why I respect them so much.
Yeah, I think everyone is unanimous on that. No matter what political faction you're with, no matter what tendencies you support, you know, we all like Golden Dawn. We all like what they've done. And what we've got to do is, you know, I mean, we shouldn't, you know, form a party called Golden Dawn and you know, replicate their political program to the letter, because that would be disingenuous and it would just be based on sentiment. But what we have got to do is we've got to take, you know, those old British ideas that made our country great in the first place, why we love our country so much, and we've got to make them current again. We've got to make them applicable to our contemporary situation, and we've got to reinvigorate our people, galvanize our people, so that just like the Greeks are doing, just like the Ukrainians are doing, just like the Hungarians are doing, and in Poland, Sweden, Germany, Austria, even in Russia, there are thousands of really good nationalists in Russia. Belarus, Latvia,
isn't too bad either.
Finland, all over Europe, our people are fighting. Now is the time that we started fighting in this country.
Well said.
Thank you.
What are your plans for the White Man March on the 15th of March?
Banner drops.
Yeah. So we decided, and I says I'd like to be involved, that the Renegade guys have started this White Man March.
Yeah.
I think the Australians are definitely going to do some stuff around Europe. And, well, we don't want to be left behind in Britain. So, I mean, I've got the anti-racist is a code word for anti-white banner. And there's that kind of main archery, which is...
Paul.
I don't think we should
talk about it on here, but we'll certainly do something. And hopefully it won't just be in Birmingham this time. It'll be across the country, several other places across, up and down the country.
Okay, leave that there. What plans, if any, does National Action have besides the White Man March coming up, you know, in the near future?
There will be a demonstration in solidarity with the Boer people in South Africa who are being... Who are you know, being subjected to a genocide?
Stage 6 genocide or something on the
according to Genocide Watch, it's something like that. It's terrible. You know, they're getting the stuffing kicked into them. You know, they're basically what will happen to us in 100 years' time. There was recently something on the BBC about the situation in South Africa, and you now actually have white slums in South Africa. You know, we hear these images that beamed around the world from Africa, you know, of these terrible, horrible ghettos, and white people are now living in those ghettos. They're now
My friend,
they've been reduced to that,
who's kind of loosely racial but never sort of put his foot in the ring, so to speak, but he's always been interested in it. He mentioned that documentary to me, mm-hmm. and he says, Paul, why are they bringing that out now? And I think because they've got to, because it's so bad, and it's so disgusting, the kind of, the white people there are not just being killed, they're being dismembered, they're being tortured, children mm-hmm. and everything, mutilated. I think they've had to let that out to show that, oh, look, we're reporting on it, because it's been, the internet is being spread around that much, the truth. I think that's what they've done now. Don't you agree? Because the BBC, they've kind of waited really to the last minute to do that, haven't they?
Yeah.
Because these farm murders have been going on since the 90s. And here we are in 2014. And, oh, the good old BBC reporting the truth.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, I mean, I agree. I think they've done that because of pressure from independent media sources. You know, the internet really has, yeah, the internet has revolutionized how people get their information. People know what's happening in South Africa. We just know from looking at the Alexa rankings of websites that do contain the truth about the situation there. You know, lots of people know about it and lots of people are hearing about it. And so we're going to be organizing a demonstration to show our solidarity with those people, to show that they're not alone, and that we're going to try and bring some pressure on both the British government and the South African government to change their policies. And we're going to hopefully get some media interest in that, you know, hopefully get some
stuff. I saw the odd demonstration by Afrikaners, mm-hmm. sort of expats over here. And I remember once we had a paper sale, and I spoke to a South African guy about all this. So that's really good. And hopefully we could get some Afrikaner sort of, well, they're refugees, aren't they, really? They're asylum seekers, real asylum seekers who have been hacked to death. It would be nice maybe if we could get a couple of them to join us, eh?
That would be lovely. You know, we'd really like to see them there. Yeah,
we'll have to look at that. Okay, Tom, we're running out of time, so I just want to finish through these last couple of questions, okay?
Okay, yeah.
So I've asked that. What are your plans for the next year? So if you don't want to go beyond the South African thing, that's okay.
I can't go into much specific detail, but we're planning on causing more havoc, being more provocative, and pissing off lots of Reds and Liberals.
Well, you don't seem to be doing too bad so far. Tom, how do people go about contacting National Action if they would like to become active? And maybe there's some people who, to be honest, it's not their cup of tea, so to say. They don't want to get out there on the streets, but maybe they could then send you some money to help you buy stickers, leaflets. I've saw your stickers, I've saw your leaflets, I've saw your banners. They're all good, but it all costs money. And I know you're paying out of your own student sort of loans, your student allowance for National Action. So if people want to drop you an email or send you a donation, how do they go about that?
Yeah, okay. Email us at contact@national-action.info and we'll get in touch with you and we'll arrange something. There are some people who are also diving into their own pockets to help us out, to pay for the domain hosting, etc., to pay for the leaflet stickers. They know who they are, and we're eternally grateful for what they're doing, how they're helping us out. Thank you to those people. And also thank you to all our activists who do turn out. You know, they do a fantastic job. And to yourself, Paul, because you've done your business, your bit as well. You know, so
no problem. Yeah. But let me just say before we run out of time, I hope you come back on again soon, Tom. But I'd like to have some of the other activists on. I'm thinking of Ryan, Sam, Ben. Do you think they would be interested in coming on next time? Maybe we can do a three-way or a four-way.
Yeah, they'd love to. They'd love to. Yeah, roundtable discussion. Yeah,
roundtable. That's the way to say. Okay, then. Well, we've got about 20 seconds left, I think. Thanks for coming on, Tom. Maybe we could just mention quickly the British Movement. They're another interesting organisation that people might want to check out, right?
Yeah, yeah. We're not a splinter of the British Movement, but what the British Movement are doing is great. You know, fantastic.
We'd have to leave it there. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to Voice of Albion on the White Network.